This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 107 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight, Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderup in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Boy, is it crowded in here tonight, Max.
It sure is. We have so many guests this episode, but they're all especially well qualified to talk about UAS, aren't they, David?
Absolutely. We're lucky to have a team from Embry-Riddle, the definitive school for aviation. And Max, why don't you introduce our guests?
Sure. First, we have Dr. Ken Witcher. He is the Dean of the College of Aeronautics. He leads more than 700 active faculty members that support over 14,000 students enrolled in 15 degree programs. Now, Ken has 20 years of service in the U.S. Air Force and experience with the F-15, the F-16, the F-22, my personal favorite, the H-60, the A-10, that's Drone Mama's personal favorite. She always says it's all about the size of the gun. The MQ-1 and the MQ-9 aircraft, as well as supporting systems. He was also a team member of the Thunderbirds. Ken was an appointed member of the Nevada UAS Test Site Selection Panel. Ken, welcome to the UAV Digest.
Glad to be here, Max. Thanks.
We also have with us David 30-Acre. He's an assistant professor and chair of unmanned flight operations. He's also the winner of the annual UAV Digest Most Interesting Name Contest. Maybe we'll find out about that. David recently retired from the U.S. Air Force after 27 years of duty in the fighter community. He's got over 3,500 hours in fighter aircraft. He served as an operational test pilot and director of advanced programs at the U.S. Air Force Warfare Center. He's a multi-engine commercial pilot and a certified flight instructor instrument. David, welcome to the UAV Digest. Were all those hours in the Viper?
Most of them were there, absolutely, in the best jet in the known universe, absolutely.
And then we're also joined by Stefan Kleinke. He is the assistant professor and program chair for the Bachelor of Science in Unmanned Systems Application degree program. He is a military aviation veteran also with 15 years and 3,000 total flying hours experience as pilot and instructor on Tornado and T-38 jet aircraft. His civilian qualifications include airline transport pilot license, commercial pilot license for helicopter and seaplane, airframe and power plant mechanic, and aircraft electrical technician certifications, as well as FCC, GMDSS radio operator, I have no idea what that is, and maintainer license with ship radar endorsement. Stefan, welcome to the show.
Hello, Max. Thanks. Yeah, it's the electronic stuff. Not that important.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, David, one of the things that...
Well, I was going to say, Max, that just about wraps up the show, doesn't it?
I know. That was pretty interesting in and of itself, I think. But one of the things that struck me, David, is just the depth of experience of these people. It really gives you a good feeling about the quality of the faculty at Embry-Riddle.
Yeah, we knew it, but I like the fact that we've got a bunch of military jet jocks on tonight. That really makes me excited. Mm. But that's not what we're going to talk about. We need to talk about unmanned systems. I guess I'll start off with the three of you. I want to go to school to learn unmanned systems. What do I need to do to start prepping before I go to university or go to Embry-Riddle or another university with an unmanned systems program?
Yeah, David, I'll take them. This is Ken. I'll take that one if it's all right. The other guys can join in here if they want to. Well, the first thing you had to figure out, and as you guys know, in the unmanned aircraft systems world, there's a lot of different applications for that type of technology. So what do you want to do? Do you want to go out and fly something like an MQ-1 or MQ-9, a larger Cat 3, Cat 4 platform, or do you want to use something smaller, like the small UAS, the Inspire, something along those lines, to go out and take pictures for your real estate company? So what do you want to do? And that will really kind of guide you and set you up for the types of degrees that are offered. Here at Emory-Riddle, we have three different campuses, as you guys probably know. The residential campuses are here at Daytona Beach and out of Prescott, Arizona, but also the worldwide campus that we're a part of. And at Daytona Beach and Prescott, we have Bachelor of Science in Unmanned Aircraft System programs that are operator-focused. So you're going to get something a lot more closer to the traditional manned flight type training, and they're geared set up to either be sensor operators or pilots or operators on a larger type of aircraft. And over in the worldwide campus, our degrees are more application-based in nature. So if we wanted to jump into one of our programs, like the Bachelor of Science in Unmanned Systems application that Stefan chairs for us, you'd see something a little different. It'd be more about the application of the technology. So if you are one of those people out there that's thinking that this UAS world's getting pretty interesting, something I want to get into, and certainly an education is going to help you enter that market or be successful in that area, then you figure out which way you want to go. It's not just, well, I want to be a pilot, so I'm going to get my pilot's license and let's go do this. The education is almost as diverse as the discipline itself.
And Ken, I know that Embry-Riddle has put together kind of a survey or an overview of the kinds of opportunities that are available for those looking towards a UAS career. Can you give us an idea of some of those kinds of opportunities?
Yeah, we certainly can. Of course, the big ones that everybody is reading involved in the community at all are aware of is with small U.S. in particular, the blooming stuff right now is agriculture and real estate and first responders, that type of stuff. But I'm going to pass this one off to Stefan, if you don't mind there, Max. Stefan recently was able to do a significant amount of industry research as we were developing and as we do with all of our degrees here at Emory-Riddle. As we start to bring those into market, we don't just sit down and go, okay, what does David 30-Acre and Stefan and Ken Witcher think that everybody should know about UAS? We actually go out and do market surveys and see what is the industry needing. And part of that market study is to see, or that needs assessment, I should say, is to see what type of folks and industry niches are we going to be targeting towards. And Stefan just recently done that with the launch of our new Bachelor of Science and MS System application. So Stefan, can you add to that one a little bit, if you don't mind?
Great point, Ken. I can just support that thought that we are not just going out and providing a degree because it's nice to have, but there should be some need out there for that degree. In order to basically provide some useful benefit to the whole industry. And the things that we identified when we set up the program is, the first question we always got is, if I want to start business X or business Y, what type of platform do I need? And so that guided our interest in setting up a program that is really application focused. The idea is not to tell you basically what platform you will need and what sensors you have to put on your platform in order to get your application going and off the ground for your business there, but to give you basically the skills and tools and background knowledge to finally make all those decisions yourself, regardless what type of application you're looking into. So we identified in that regard basically three main pillars of the application that someone can build the career around. The first one is the administration part, which includes all the business decisions of how much money do I want to spend, how much money do I have to or do I have available for spending, and what kind of people do I want to hire, what contracts do I need to make within the industry to get basically my business rolling in the UAS world. And the second biggest one is obviously the operation, and we are linking there into what is provided already with the pilot programs and the operator programs, but our focus is all the support around it. So people should gain knowledge, skills, and background information on how to make decisions in mission planning, in sensor planning, in procurement of platforms, and basically guide the operation with proper set of decisions that have to be made basically in the way. And the third one, as everyone knows, is development and education. So the third pillar we identified is you want to contribute to the industry and increase the future technology out there, you should have some background knowledge towards systems development and systems integration. And that basically couples directly into the engineering programs. Our goal was, again, not to make another engineering program, but to make it application specific. So in our application oriented design process and development process, it's more about how to pair the proper platform with the proper sensors and integrate them basically into a working system. So as you can see, overall, our main goal was to provide an application-based program. And let me directly add that here, not just for UAS or aerial systems, but we basically thought about all unmanned systems, including maritime, ground systems, and even space systems there.
Well, we want to talk about specifically what the programs are like and what students can expect. But let's just talk about the students for a minute first. What can you tell us, maybe, David, about the motivations of the students? What is it about this whole field that's interesting to the students at Embry-Riddle?
Well, thanks. I really think that it has a lot to do with aviation and the technology that goes into it. Because if you take a look at these systems that are out there right now, it used to be you could get into aviation, you could go fly something. Or you could get into aviation and you could design something or do the engineering behind it. Or you could get in there and you could do some of the beeps and squeaks, the electronic side of it, and communications and all that. And the UAS world really allows you to get in there and do all of them together at one time. So whether your interest is in the aerodynamics and flying them or building them or the designing different spectrum analyzer type of capabilities for these to be able to encrypt the data links and things like that. There's just so many different areas you can get into, and it's all in one. So it's, for the eclectic folks out there like myself, it's a fantastic way to go because you can continue to shift gears and where you're going. And I get asked all the time about for students that want to get into this field, and they ask me, what should I do? What should I start flying these? And of course you should. But at the same time, my advice is always be overqualified, and that's what we try to do at Embry-Riddle is we try not to just give somebody a qualification to be able to fly a UAS. We want them to be able to fly UAS, but we also want them to have a bachelor's or master's degree in unmanned systems. And if you go to one of the campuses, the brick and mortar campuses, you'll get a private pilot's or a commercial pilot's license as well. So we're trying to supply the industry out there with folks that are overqualified. So when you get a list of applicants and you go, holy smokes, this guy's got a commercial license, he has a degree in unmanned systems, and he has, 300 flight hours on the Inspire, whatever it might be, we want him to be overqualified. So that's kind of the point of view we come from.
Well, Max, he answered one of my questions, whether if they were going to come out with a PPL as well as their degree. And I guess that dovetails well into the 333 things. How are you guys developing your program to focus on regulations coming out in the future? I know it's kind of fluid right now with the 333s and the proposal that's out there. But how fluid are you as far as what the future holds, and how are you targeting? So as far as regulation goes, it's not necessarily clear. It's as clear about clear as mud. So what do you think about that?
Hey, David, this is Ken. I'll take a first stab at that one, let the other guys join in if they want to. Well, exactly. We're in the same boat. You guys have clearly recognized that everybody's in. So we're kind of waiting to see what is it going to be. Now, there are things we can do, and certainly in this applications type area that Stefan just explained, that type of education is going to be valuable no matter what the criteria for certification within the National Airspace System turns out to be. At our residential campuses where we're doing the engineering programs, that's going to be unrelated to any type of the certification. The flight programs that we're doing at the residential campus, the UAS programs there, they're more geared and result with a commercial ticket, just as David mentioned. But here at the Worldwide, when we start talking about training, and certainly we want to be a part of that moving forward, we want to keep, at this point, keep that conversation very ethical. There's a lot of people, or there's a sense, or a desire in some cases even to kind of say, hey, we're going to train to this level, and we kind of got our fingers crossed that that's what the FAA is going to say, and we don't want to get into that game. So right now we are focused on preparing ourselves and doing some really interesting things out there in the UAS world with some familiarization type flights, some introductory type flights for folks that are in the industry. They're wanting to get exposure to UAS operations, but certainly staying away from that certification world until we have a real clear understanding of exactly what the FAA wants. And then when we know that, we'll be able to step in there and provide that quality, high-end education and training that Emeritus is known for.
Maybe, Stefan, can you describe what the coursework is like? What's the balance between classroom lectures, lab work, flying? Give us a sense for what students could expect.
Sure, Max. One of the goals that we set out when we started developing new courses was to give the students a more hands-on experience, especially for us in Worldwide. The biggest thing is our distributed learning environment. So we have to be totally cognizant and aware of where students are. They basically join from all over the world, at what time zone they are doing their work. So we want to minimize basically the direct face-to-face lecture amount, where the student just sits and listens, and want to get him more engaged into research work and lab work if possible. In order to do that, we basically fielding a couple of new technologies also in the education part by trying out virtual environments basically for learning and integrating those into our programs so that the student really can get some hands-on training in different aspects of UAS, but also of our other programs. And as I said, research is a big part of all of our programs. And what a student, for example, can expect in aerodynamics courses, that he picks his platform of interest, whether it is an aircraft or whether it is a small UAS type of system, and basically applies what he learns on that platform or on that example of that platform, and provides basically his assignments directly focused on what he wanted to do the assignments at. So not everyone is doing the same math. Basically, the guy who's doing the big aircraft is doing the math for the big aircraft. The guy for the small one is doing the math for the small one. So that's our focus here. And as I said, trying to get the student really involved and hands-on on his own example.
Now, the university has been out there in the community in several different events, I know. Embry-Riddle was at Oshkosh, and I think, David, weren't you at the last year's Reno Air Races doing work at the Drone Zone?
Yes, the inaugural one was last year at Reno Air Races. That's exactly right. And I've been involved with them up there for quite a few years, and last year as we got into the Nevada chase to get the FAA test site, starting to talk to folks, we decided that it'd be a good idea to try to introduce it up there. And we have a Drone Zone in partnership with the University of Nevada, Reno, which we're doing again this year. And we're setting up the Drone Zone, and we'll be doing races up there as well, just like we did last year. And like we did back at Oshkosh. I don't know if you caught that or not, but we did some races there. This one will be more of a bring your own drone, the BYOD type of setup, like we did last year. And just a fantastic crowd came out, lots of interest, and it's going to be about three times the size that it was last year out there in the Drone Zone.
Do you do that? Well, I'm sure you do that in part to bring some awareness to the programs that Embry-Riddle offers. But also, I imagine there must be a component of it that's just to sort of generate awareness about what drones are, what they're like, what they can do. Is that right? Is that the way to look at these kinds of outreach efforts by Embry-Riddle?
Absolutely. That's the second part of that, is trying to get the public educated on them in a lot of cases. You know, for example, we were just up at Seafair in Seattle. And if you take a look at their history, the police department up there purchased a whole bunch of small UASs a few years ago. And the public really didn't know about it. And they went crazy when they found out, and they actually are not allowing them to fly any of those, and they've shipped them off somewhere else. So the public perception of these, I think, is very important, and especially in the flying community. So when we go out there to air shows and we let folks come in and we talk to them about the technology, a lot of times the pilots will come up and they'll be real upset about the UAS out there. And they find out that we're pilots as well. And they start to talk and have a conversation about how we change the education of the folks that are flying them. And that's where a lot of this work that the FAA with the Know Before You Fly program has come from. So we're trying to engage the public as well and show them the technology and showcase that just as well as, and by the way, we just happen to have a few degrees in that area too. So it works out well.
We have a number of listeners. Actually, we have a lot of listeners who are interested in getting into this industry in one way or another, ranging from folks who've got their DJI Phantoms and they'd like to start doing some real estate shoots, or other folks who are more interested in some greater capabilities, greater sensor capabilities for precision agriculture, things like that, sort of spans the spectrum. But financing an education is oftentimes an issue, and we've had some listeners who have paid thousands of dollars for 3-day or 1-week drone courses and have come away, some of them okay, but some of them kind of dissatisfied. But the programs that you're looking at are much greater in scope, I guess, and are more part of a sort of a deliberate educational process leading to a career. Is that the way to look at it? Maybe Ken can start out with that. And what kinds of opportunities are there for folks who might have limited financial means to fund this?
Yeah, Max, that's a really good point. And as you know, a degree in this type of environment, in the aviation aerospace environment, but specifically in the UAS niche here, a degree is going to have value. And here at Emory-Riddle, as a whole, that we are aviation biased in pretty much every type of degree we do. Now, we do everything from engineering to cybersecurity to the business disciplines. We're a pretty broad, comprehensive university, but overall, we have an aerospace and aviation bias. And our students who graduate from our programs, it's very important to us that they're employable. And right now, our graduates, our recent graduates, we're maintaining about a 93% employability rate. So we're up there in the top of that, and we're proud of that. And it's not just that we're Emory-Riddle. Of course, we provide a very quality education and with those degrees. But the second thing is we're in the aerospace and aviation industry, which is also, as you guys know, growing. You guys saw the Boeing report that just came out last week with the growth for pilots and maintainers in that area. So we're very cognizant of that. We're very proud of that. And we build our degrees, as we mentioned earlier, not just from the hip saying, you know, we think this is what we think that you should have, but we go out and survey the industry, talk to the industry, talk to our industry advisory board representatives, do analysis, needs analysis, to make sure that program that the student is signing up for, and certainly there, it costs money to get an education, especially at this level, this quality, to those folks who put in that time, put in that money to get that education, that at the end of the day, it's going to mean something. And that's important to us. And we focus on that. And I could go through the pedagogy of that and it would bore you silly. But we have a focus, and we review every year. We do an assessment on every program we have to ensure that the curriculum that we've designed and developed are taking our students to where we're telling industry that they are and the capabilities they have. And again, that keeps the industry folks interested in the graduates from our programs, because they know they're getting somebody that can do the things that we tell the industry that our programs are able to provide.
As part of the programs, are you flying multi-rotors as well as fixed wing? Just tell us exactly, what is it that you're flying?
Well, over at the Daytona Beach, the residential campuses where they're doing the flight, of course, we got 88, Emory-Riddle as a whole, we've got about 88 aircraft on brand new 172s and some Diamond D42s out there that we do the manned flight stuff in and get our certifications in. So even if you go through the Bachelor of Science in Unmanned Systems Science that's over at Daytona Beach campus, you're going to walk away with a commercial ticket, and it's going to be the same FAA criteria that any commercial pilot would get, and you'd get that through the flight programs. But they also have about 16 UAS simulators over there, and they're simulators that you would anticipate operating a platform closer to the size of an MQ-1 or MQ-9. They have that general atomics type flavor where they have an operator and a sensor operator in tandem, and the controls would be something that one of those type of pilots would recognize. So they have those sims that they're able to do the hands-on training, and all of that's going to be a fixed wing operation type of system. Now, if we wanted to do our introduction, in our case, doing familiarization type training with small UAS right now, we do that primarily with David here in our UAS experience truck that we have going around, and we take it to the air shows and places. But we still today, as you guys know, have to operate under a netting system because right. we want to be able to operate, obviously, legally on the airfield. So we operate in those environments, so somewhat restrictive, but we can take, as David, and he can explain it much better than I can, but he can talk to students and maybe start them off, a potential student, start them off on something as small as a little SEMA and get that basic experience and then kind of talk them through that process, the same as you would do with a manned flight, with starting with something like a 152, and talk them through that process up to something much larger. Now, that's not part of the curriculum right now, but except for the virtual part that Stefan was alluding to earlier. But that's certainly part of the experience that we're gaining on how do you do this type of training to folks that are going to be operating, in many cases, a small UAS, so we can do it effectively when the criteria come out.
Yeah, I think universities are kind of a little bit hamstrung right now in terms of what they can offer in terms of actual flight time. Outside of gymnasiums and indoors.
You listen to some of the other podcasts out there and some other the people in the industry and some of the rogues and the cowboys, and they say, well, pilots don't necessarily make good UAV operators. Likewise, good UAV operators might not make good pilots, yet you guys are of the opinion that you can blend both of them. What's your take on the video gamers are much better UAV pilot than someone who can operate a Cessna 172?
Well, I'll jump on that one if you don't mind there. I think most of those comments probably come from folks that aren't pilots. That's really
agreed. But we do have a lot of people who aren't pilots who listen to us.
Absolutely. So what I generally say when people come up to fly the little the real flight sims that we have and then to go out and fly in the Embry-Riddle experience there with us, the first thing I ask is, are you a pilot? And if they say yes, I go, okay, this is going to take a while then. Because it is different. There's no doubt about it, you know, and it's different skills that you're using, especially with quads. You're flying something that turns about axes that you just can't do in a regular aircraft. So it definitely takes a lot of relearning. As far as the actual skills that it takes to do it, I don't think there's any difference between a pilot and someone who's not. The big difference, though, is the knowledge of the airspace, how the all the systems might come together. And also, you know, from the FAA's point of view, there is someone there who is now culpable for any accidents, which is something that they're very interested in making sure that they know who's doing what. So, I think there is a lot of truth in what you're saying there, is that you definitely don't have to be a pilot to fly one of these. And going back to what we were talking about before, in order to get into the industry, you know, being overqualified is what you're really looking for. So, some folks say, you know, you don't need to be a pilot to fly these, but if you're interested in flying large ones, you know, something that might be a Group 5 or a Predator Global Hawk or whatever, you know, a UPS or FedEx aircraft here in 20 years from now, I guarantee you that you're going to have to be a pilot to do any of that. So it depends on what it is you're looking to do. If you're looking to fly and inspire around and take pictures for a real estate company or a bridge building company, absolutely. I don't think there's really any difference. But if you're looking at something larger and into the future and getting into that, you're going to have to be a pilot to fly a certified aircraft. So it's just the beast that it is.
All right. Well, good. Interesting conversation. We're kind of drawing to a close here. Can you give our listeners some pointers as to where they can go online to learn more about Embry-Riddle and the courses that are available in the UAS arena?
Sure, I'll take that one there, Max. Anybody out there, they just want to jump in at www.erau.edu. That's going to take it to our site. And from that site, you can actually see the types of programs that we're offering. And you can kind of pick the category. You're interested in maintenance, engineering, off aviation, or what from the toolbox that we provide here at Embry-Riddle. So that one will take you and get you any of the information that you need. Obviously, feel free to reach out to any of us here, run us down, and we're happy to help you out and answer your questions as well.
All right, fantastic. David, do we have a video of the week?
We do have a video of the week, and this is actually kind of cool, and I think our guests would also appreciate this. I had an email from the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich, and they are currently working on an aircraft called the Atlantic Solar 2. It's a UAV, and it just broke an endurance record of flying 81 hours, 4 days, 3 nights, on continuous solar-powered flight. It's the UAV parallel to our Solar Impulse. And if you're interested in Solar Impulse, you need to listen to our episode with Bertrand on Airplane Geeks. But we have a video of the record flight, and that's our video of the week. And I'd like to thank Philippe for reaching out to us. And I think as a little further down the year, I think we'll reach out to them and see if we can get the team on to talk about solar-powered UAVs and long-endurance solar-powered UAVs, because that's one of those technologies that we've been talking from the beginning about. And if we're going to have if we're going to have relays, unmanned aerial vehicles that are acting as relays, we want them up long endurance. So, and 81 hours is pretty impressive, considering it's almost the same endurance as the Japan to Hawaii flight. That's a good video of the week.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that when they finally did bring it down, that they had to bring it down earlier than they originally planned because the weather turned really bad. They had high winds and threat of thunderstorms, so they actually had to bring it down early. But quite an accomplishment. It's a great little video. It just runs a few minutes. It's not too long. But the craft is interesting, the Atlantic Solar. It's got a 5.6-meter wingspan. It uses a Pixhawk PX-4 autopilot. And this flight occurred in the middle of July this year, 2015. So take a look at that video. All right. Well, we want to thank you for listening. This has been episode 107 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com. Show notes at theuavdigest.com/107. And David, tell folks where they can find us in all the usual social media places.
You can reach us on Twitter at UAV Digest. We have our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/UAV Digest. Or if you want to support the show, you can do it multiple ways. One, send us feedback at our email address is feedback@theuavdigest.com. Send us news links or a video of the week, or reach out to Max and I. You could also help the show by leaving a feedback on iTunes, or if you listen via some other podcatcher or Stitcher. Two other ways would be you could reach out and purchase some swag through our Cafe Press store, or if you'd like, you can become a patron at patreon.com/theuavdigest. And all of those links you can find on our homepage. So I guess with that, I'd like to thank our guests from Emory Riddle. We appreciate you guys taking the time, and hopefully we can develop a longer-term relationship with you folks. And when you have new events coming out or something, you'd come back on the show. What do you think, guys?
Love to. Appreciate it.
Yeah, many thanks and thanks for giving us the opportunity here.
We'll see you. Thanks, guys.
So with that, I'll say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.